Facebook to the Pet Savant Unleashed. Well, today we are in Italy. Don't even remember because we've been running around, but we are in Italy, and it's amazing to us how the difference of what dogs behave. And we talked about this last week because we were in France last week. And this is about teaching people how to impact their dogs' lives and behavior by what they're doing from the very beginning. Now, in the U.S., I am incredibly busy, and United States has different laws and rules and regulations and regions. And we do see a huge difference in the way dogs are treated regionally. So there's also kind of something like that here in Europe. There are countries that are definitely more friendly and more kind to animals, and there are definitely some countries that are at the other end of the spectrum. There are countries who eating dog meat and cat meat is just like a regular cool thing. Now, we go to the fact of, think about it. If you have a pet dog, you're not going to really want to eat dog meat. And if you like animals, you're probably not going to want to eat a dog. But we're also eating, you know, chickens and other birds. You know, we're eating cows. We're eating pigs. We're eating other things that are cute and furry. And I'm not going to tell you that you should become vegan or vegetarian because that's not my decision. That's not my thing to tell you what to do or what not to do. But it is interesting how in Europe, it's just such a different feeling of what dogs are included. You don't see, of course, you wouldn't see them because they'd be at home, but you don't see dog fights. You don't see people walking, you know, they're good dog, and then it gets attacked by another dog. The only time in the last 2.5 weeks that I have seen anything was two little chihuahuas at a big event that were barking at everybody. Not necessarily dogs, just barking at everyone. And, you know, they're two little long-haired chihuahuas. They were totally adorable, but they were little terrorists. They were being little poop heads. So that was really kind of standing out to me as like, wow, that's pretty amazing. But, you know, it's really an interesting thing of relating and correlating the fact that people are very active and inclusive with their dogs in their daily lives versus like where we are in the U.S. where most people don't take their dogs everywhere. Now, obviously, if you have a service dog, yes, and it's a legitimate service dog and you have a legitimate disability under the Americans with Disabilities Act of 1990, yes, and you would take the dog with you, but the dog in that case would be treated like an adaptive or assistive device, much like a cane, a walker, crutches, wheelchair, or anything else that would help to mitigate a disability. But the very interesting part of that is in Europe, and again, we're just talking portions of Europe that we've been actually filming or taping from. It's interesting because people really don't leave their dogs at home. You see dogs who are barely able to walk, but they're out there walking, and they're healthy, and they're getting older, but they're not aging the same way as U.S. dogs because they're included. You're walking through a train station. There are dogs all over the place. You're walking down the street. There are dogs all over the place. You're even in an airport. There are dogs all over the place. It's not unusual for people to include their dogs, and it is unusual, very unusual, to hear a dog barking at another dog or trying to lunge at a human. So is it that there are just different dogs in Europe? Is that the issue? That, you know, maybe the dogs are just kinder and nicer in Europe? No. It's that people include their dogs. People don't tolerate the barking and obnoxious behaviors. And they seek help right away. But it really does seem that when you're walking, you know, around, you see tons of dogs. I have probably petted, 50 or 60 dogs. And, you know, in the last 3 weeks, it's pretty amazing. The dogs don't have behavioral issues like they do in the U.S. because people, from the time they get the pets, include them. They take them out. They bring them with them to stores. They bring it, you know, Europe has a totally different view of animals. Now, I'm not saying that in the U.S. we don't treat animals well, because, again, regionally, you know, we have places where dogs are, you know, fought like pit bulls, and you know, using poor little puppies and other breeds and types of animals as bait dogs. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about in the general day, the general scheme of things, how are dogs treated in the U.S.? They're spoiled rotten versus being spoiled. Let me explain. You have a child who's 7 or 8 years old, and the child has the latest gaming system and a new iPad and whatever things that they want, toys, games, whatever. But the child is well-behaved. Well, maybe that child is getting those things because he has to earn money, getting, let's say, chores done. You know, get $5 a week for doing the dishes or taking the garbage out or whatever. But that's not really what happens a lot of times. We spoil our kids rotten. Now, yes, we want to do that because we want to give them everything. So we love them and we want them to grow up to, you know, feel like they had a great childhood. The problem is doing too much and overdoing it can ruin a child, right? You've heard of spoiled brat. Look at, you know, a lot of the child actors and actresses that, you know, grew up with really bad issues because from the time they were young, maybe they weren't really young, right? But from the time they were young, they received too much. Families of kids who are very entitled, very, very wealthy families tend to be a little bit, you know, highfalutin and feel that they're better than everyone else. They're spoiled rotten. But it's the same thing with dogs. It's really the same thing. We want to spoil our kids, and we should spoil our dogs, but not spoiling them rotten. So that means that instead of just giving and giving and giving and giving all the time, we have to sit there and say to ourselves, what are we doing wrong? Why in America, which arguably has more pets than any other country, why are we in this position where we have so many animals with behavioral issues? And I'm not just talking about dogs. I'm talking about cats. I'm talking about horses. I'm talking about different pets in general. Now, you're not going to necessarily walk your bearded dragon all over, you know, in Central Park or, you know, at the train station, but there's no reason that you shouldn't be able to have a dog who's going to get along with other people, with other animals, and be a joy to be around versus spoiling them rotten, which is you take your dog out and it's just protecting you and barking and growling and snarling and lunging and pulling you on the leash. That is not what you see here. It's unusual. Like I said, I remember two long-haired chihuahuas in the train station. And they were in Nice, France, when we were there. And honestly, it was like, whoa, there are dogs barking. Whoa, there. And they were barking at people because those two dogs were not well socialized. And if they were well socialized, the owner should have separated them out, taken one out, and had the other one either with another person in a different location, working simultaneously but working separately. And we're going to go into that and explain to you what you should do if you have a situation that you're multiple dog home and how you can fix these kind of things. But the exception here in Europe is, oh my gosh, there's a dog. Wow, I heard a dog bark. Versus in the States, many, many places, and we all know this, it's like, you know, dogs barking and carrying on and lunging and dragging owners and all that. It doesn't have to be that. So, you know, a lot of times also what tends to happen is we get kind of tunnel vision. So we look at our dog and we blame everybody else and everyone else's dog because, oh, that dog started barking at my dog, so it's that dog's fault. Agreed. But it's just like if your child, let's go back to being a good parent here, a human parent, if your child winds up breaking a kid's nose and pulverizing him, and the child says, yeah, well, he called me a name. Yeah, okay. The first child who called it your child a name, that was wrong. That should be taken up with that child's parents. There should be an apology, school, you know, getting involved, whatever. But what do we do with dogs? We don't do that. There's no accountability. The vast majority of people, I'm not saying everyone, I feel that the vast number of people and the majority of owners, when another dog barks and then their dog reacts, they blame the first dog. And that's kind of like the telling your child, well, if everyone else jumped off the bridge, would you jump off too? So each behavior and each moment should be treated separately. If a dog barks at your dog, like if all of my dogs, doesn't matter which one you pick, if a dog barks at my dogs or lunges at my dogs don't even look at them. First of all, when you walk by another animal or person that wouldn't give you that feeling of being safe, you should put your animal on the other side. So let's say the dangerous or scary thing is on the left. You should place your animal, your dog, on your right to show your dog that you are providing for his needs and protecting him from the perceived danger. This way, it's a physical way of showing your dog that you are protecting him or her, not the other way around. And that is really important, and I don't see people doing this. I don't see your local dog trainer doing this. I don't see people who are calling themselves behaviorists telling you this. It's common sense. If your child's classmate who called them names was coming down, if they were coming down the other side of the street, you wouldn't leave your child on that side. You would take your child, place your child on the opposite side, so that you were blocking, you were protecting your child. Why don't we do that with our dogs? 90% of the issues that are created when a dog barks at another dog or your dog being reactive or another dog being reactive are because the dog is perceiving the fact that he is closer to the perceived dangerous or scary thing as you telling him or letting him believe that he's protecting you. Now, I'm not saying that that isn't, you know, the case sometimes if you're in a bad area, you're kind of somebody's coming towards you and you're concerned. Yeah, of course. Yeah, you're going to put your dog between you and the dangerous or scary person. But when there's a child or a stroller or a skateboard or, you know, a lawnmower or a human or another animal coming the opposite direction, put your dog on the other side. Just place them, take them right behind your back. From one hand to the other, hand him off from your left hand to your right or right hand to your left, and show him that you are placing him in the safety position. Now, it's the same kind of thing, and it really hits you in Europe, because in Europe, you typically don't rent cars when you're going to a large city for a couple of days. So it was really one of those things I really couldn't wait to get to you guys and tell you, because it's important. So first of all, if there's, let's say, a parent and child walking down the street, and it's kind of a dangerous area, aren't you as a parent going to put yourself closer to the danger and put your child away from the danger? Of course, right? That's normal. That's what we do. But we don't correlate that to, I've got a dog who wants to protect me, and there's a perceived threat coming from the opposite direction. Yeah, let me keep the dog by the perceived threat and worry and, oh, what's going to happen, or wonder, geez, look at that, Martha, he did it again. I just can't believe people can't figure it out. So the same way as you would move your child to your opposite side to protect your child, move your dog to the other side to protect your dog. Even though it's not a true protection, it is perceived by your pet as protecting. And that's one of your basic tenets of behavior and rehabilitation of behavioral issues, is the perception by your dog that you are protecting him versus his having to protect you. It is very black and white. I say that. Dogs are not brown or red or black or green or purple, even though some great groomers can do that with, you know, white-haired dogs. But dogs are black and white. You either own your company, you don't. You're protecting him or he's protecting you. You're the parent, you're the child. It's very black and white. So little things like that, that I see are the things that, especially in Europe here, France, Italy, Greece, you know, the whole area, it's amazing how well-behaved the dogs are and how included they are. I talk to, like, hundreds of people, and we ask, oh, have you ever seen a dog fight? They're like, no, they run and play. Have you ever seen a dog bite? Oh, no. Are people afraid of dogs? Not really. It's the culture. It's like in Greece, there were actual feeding stations for dogs and cats where the stray dogs, people go and they bring food and, you know, it's stocked. It's like a bird feeder, but they feed. And it's crazy because you can watch this. You can actually see the dogs waiting for the other dog to finish and walk away, and then the next one comes up. And sometimes a group, a couple of them, will eat together. There's no growling, there's no fighting, there's no chasing away. Because the dogs there learn in the way that God intended them to learn, which was from other dogs. So if you have a very stable group of dogs and another dog goes into that group, it learns quickly that, hey, if I want to fit in, I've got to model after those people. It's the same thing as in school when you have kids in a classroom who are super well behaved and you have one child who enters the classroom new, but that child is a troublemaker, as we say. It's kind of crazy, but the kid after a while realizes this isn't working because nobody does this. Nobody likes this behavior. And I have no friends. Well, I'm going to be a better behaved, good person, good student, and try to fit in. So that's what happens with animals. So if you have animals who are well behaved, chances are it's because you brought them places, you do things and include them. The issue for me is that too many people pawn it off on blaming somebody else. It's the old blame game. They pawn off the issue. Oh, well, that dog growled at my dog, or that dog barked at my dog, or that dog looked funny, or raised a tackle. It doesn't matter. If somebody says something to you, like today I was walking, we were walking, and somebody said something really unkind, and I didn't let it go. I mean, maybe I should have, but it was a man, and he made a very sexist comment. It's a store right here in Rome, and gave me the finger. And if he were a dog, I would have flipped him over and put my knee across. Well, no, if he were a human, I would have a dog. I wouldn't do that. But the guy needed to have somebody tell him that he was being a complete jerk. Well, I went back in there, and I faced him, and I looked at him, and I said, this is why I'm going to put a really bad review for you, because not only am I not going to buy a product from you, but I'm going to let other people know what a jerk you are. And you go, oh, I don't want your money. And I said, well, you know what? You're not going to have the money from a lot of people because you're a jerk, you're rude, you're obnoxious. And you know what? He wasn't even from this, from Italy. He came from another country. You could see he's a miserable person. Not that, you know, people, immigrants are miserable people. This man was, I guess he just didn't fit in. But he was lying. You could see he was cheating people. And after a while, I just said, you know what, I'm done. You're not going to get away with that with me. Now, maybe I did, maybe I didn't. But if he were a dog and he behaved like that, he'd be euthanized. So maybe, you know, I'm just saying, not going to give you the name of the place, but if you're there, you definitely wouldn't want to buy anything from him. You know, animals, that brings me to my next thing is, you know, animals just are treated differently. And, you know, a person who's rude and obnoxious, you can't euthanize them, right? A person who's rude and obnoxious and, you know, maybe even hits somebody, you have to deal with them, right? Because you can't do that. People are so quick to judge animals and put down a dog with behavioral issue when, you know, people get away with it. And nobody takes the person to task. But people are too quick, especially in the States, to, you know, blame the animal, put the animal to sleep. And I'm not saying that sometimes that isn't warranted, But it really is something that, to me, is shows that people are not committed. And you don't see that in Europe. You really see people who, you know, you see an older dog. I've seen, I don't know, maybe 8 or 10 tripod dogs walking around. People really cherish their animals. So when you see an animal that isn't well-behaved, oh, let's put it to sleep. But why is it that we rehabilitate, you know, criminals who are murderers and rapists, but we don't rehabilitate a dog that snapped at somebody's obnoxious kid who was, you know, bouncing on its chest? It just doesn't make sense. So I think in some ways, the U.S., maybe we spoil our dogs rotten. And I think in many places in Europe, I think we are spoiling dogs, but not rotten. And that's why we have so many well-behaved dogs. So let's go into something briefly about, you know, since we're going to talk about that. I do want to come back after the break with a story of a tripod dog who came into my life. And we will do that in a moment when we return after the break. Stay tuned. And welcome back to the Pet Savant Unleashed. Well, we're talking about European customs of animals and the way animals are treated versus the U.S. I want to tell you a sad story. I've got to do this every week to keep everybody understanding what we should cherish. When we see a person who is limb different, like someone who's had a leg amputated or malformation or whatever it is, we look at those people and very often we really feel like, oh no, you're so sad. And maybe it is, but I know a lot of people, especially in my line of work and what I do, and I don't feel sorry for these people because I know I don't want somebody to feel sorry for me because of something that I survived. It's like when somebody finds out that I've had, you know, 3 bouts of cancer, and they say, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And I usually kind of half jokingly say, oh, I'm sorry. Do you mean you're sorry that I survived? You're sorry that I had cancer? And they go, oh, no, I'm not sorry you survived. And I said, you know, congratulations, right? Because I survived it. One thing that stands out to me in Europe is the number of homeless. I mean, and I'm not knocking Italy because we love it here. There are homeless people all over the place, and it's really sad because we look at it and we say, isn't there something we can do to help those people? But if there were homeless dogs, we round them up and we dump them in a shelter, right? We take them out, and we don't even, you know, look at them in that same way. So I want you to think about how we look at and perceive animals versus humans and understand how each group feels, right? Now, I don't purport to know everything about anything, but I do know a lot about a lot. One thing I know is the people that I know who have either lost limbs or were born in a certain way, most of those people don't want you to feel sorry for them. And it's the same with the dog. Dog doesn't feel sorry for itself when it has a leg amputated. Lieutenant Dan, who was born with only 2 legs, and he's got his Instagram, Noble Service Dogs Official on Instagram, and Noble Service Dogs on TikTok. If you look at Lieutenant Dan, that dog, you can't feel sorry for him. He's amazing. He's incredible. He doesn't feel sorry for himself. I think our perception is that when an animal, especially an amputation due to cancer or a car accident or something, I think people kind of, I always say, they can't get past the animal's past. And so what they do, instead of letting that go, they kind of keep it going and they treat the animal differently. Here's a story about a little dog, not so little, an 80-pound dog. And she had, this is a number of years ago, she had a very quick-growing osteosarcoma, which is a bone cancer So it's cancer in the bone. Usually, unfortunately, it happens with a lot of kids. It is not super common, but it's common enough. And a lot of these kids end up having to have legs amputated or modified, and they have limb differences. Those kids, though, are going to sink or swim based on, oftentimes, the other kids that they can see and people who are role models, where they see that, oh, my gosh, look at that guy. I didn't even know that he had a leg amputated, and he had the same kind of cancer and all that. It's our perception. And I find the same thing with dogs. When an animal has a leg amputated, we as humans are like, oh, my gosh, this is terrible. And you just feel horrible because you look at it as a human looks at it. Animals don't look at that the same way as a human, right? So an animal, especially dogs, a dog loses a leg, and maybe it's a little more difficult to get around, but that dog still wants to play. That dog still wants to run. That dog still wants to chew on a bone. That dog still wants to eat special treats. That dog still wants to snuggle with you. And they don't look at things the same way because they're not hung up on it. They're not looking at other dogs who have four legs and saying, oh, I wish I had four legs. They're just going, hey, you want to play? Hey, you want to sniff my butt? Hey, you want to do whatever it is you want to do? It's the way we perceive it. And very often you'll see in people that, you know, they say, oh, I couldn't have my dog's leg amputated, or I couldn't do this particular treatment because I don't want my dog to be sick. And I respect that. But there are vet hospitals that are incredible. This particular dog had a front leg amputated, including the shoulder blade, so the clavicle, which it then takes away that weird movement in the front. And the dog came back, and the owner actually gave the dog to me because she said, I can't look at her. The dog was, I think, 9.5 years old. The dog lived 1.5 years after that, so she lived to about 11 after we adopted her. She lived 1.5 years. But she lived her best life. She ran around with my other dog. She played. She ate. She chewed the bone. Did it take her a minute extra, like a couple seconds extra to get up? Yeah, maybe. But she didn't look at it as like, oh, I wish I had four legs. Now, I'm not saying that that correlates with, you know, people who have limb differences, but specifically with animals, they adjust to it remarkably well. And there are vet hospitals and rehab centers for animals, for dogs, cats, you know, I'm sure almost anything, including horses. But these rehab hospitals are able to do so much with these dogs and cats because, after all, they are, you know, the ones who are, you know, wanting to play and have that positive attitude. Now, that doesn't mean that if you have a 15 or 16-year-old dog who's on, you know, not doing well, and then he gets cancer or, you know, has an issue and you're going to go put him through that kind of surgery and recovery period. But it does mean that you got to get your feelings out of the way. You have to stop focusing on how you would feel and look at the animal or the person who is going through it and be supportive to that animal or person, not making your judgment for them, but allowing them to make that judgment. So I feel that a lot of times people just don't know, and they look at what we feel as humans, and they think that the animal's feeling the same way. And that's not always true. Many times it isn't that at all. Many times it's just us not wanting to look at, oh, look, he has three legs. But try to take that away from you and try to take that out of your mind of, you know, let's say an animal has an issue and there's something going on. Take that away for a minute. Is that dog happy? Is the dog enjoying life? Is he still playing? Is he still, you know, looking around? Does he enjoy being with you? Does he enjoy, you know, interacting with other animals and with kids and all? If you say, yeah, oh, you know, he seems okay, then let him just be. Because if he had been born that way instead, he would have been fine because that's all he knew. Right? It's like when a person is born with a disability, very often they don't, that's just their normal, right? So it's your normal, and it will become your dog's normal. it will definitely, you'll see, it will definitely play itself out, and your dog will probably surprise you. So, again, when we're looking at animals, don't put your human emotions onto the animal. Try to let your animal do what it wants to do. And if it just wants to lay around and sit with you on by the TV, then great, that's what they want to do. But don't project your feelings on an animal, because if you do that, it's not fair to them. They're pretty awesome. You'd be surprised. All right, let's get on to the next very important thing we're going to be talking about today, which is traveling on planes, trains, cars with dogs. You know, one of the things I hear all the time is people say, oh, we're going to be flying, so I'm going to give my dog some sedatives. I'm going to give him Benadryl. I'm going to give him Trazodone. I'm going to give him whatever, Prozac. I'm going to give him something so that he's calm. Please don't do that without speaking with your personal veterinarian. I'm not giving any vet advice to anybody, because this is something you should speak with your own veterinarian. What people don't realize, and especially with French bulldogs and pugs and other brachycephalic animals, when you start messing with them and giving them tranquilizers, it affects the heart rate. And if a dog is stressed or if the dog is at altitude, there are many things that can affect heart rate. And there are many things that can affect the dog's health while it's flying. So please don't just blanket go like, oh, yeah, my friend gave me Trazodone pills for her German Shepherd. And my Chihuahua, you know, I'm going to give him a half of one because, you know, he's half the size of a German Shepherd. And then you wind up, you know, dogs can die. Sometimes you hear about these things. It's not always the airlines who are making mistakes. Sometimes, yes, certainly, but not always. There are a lot of people who will not tell you, but they will tranquilize their dogs before they fly. And then the dog's heart rate suffers, and the dog's just general, you know, their oxygenation of their blood, all those things really matter. You know, and you're giving it sedatives, it's changing that. So please, please, please don't play vet. I don't play vet, and I know a lot about animals. I don't do that. Contact your veterinarian if you're going to be flying, traveling, whatever it is. If your dog is a little anxious or nervous, there are a lot of things that you can do besides giving it a medication that you think is going to work, because unless you are willing to take that chance of something happening to your animal, I would be highly recommending you contact your licensed veterinarian who you trust and who knows your dog or your cat and knows what's going to be best for your pet. So let's get kind of through that. Another thing is bathing and grooming. People are over-bathing and over-grooming their dogs. And then you have people who've never groomed or bathed their dogs. If you have a dog who has an oilier coat, think about the animals that are in water, like, you know, polar bears and seals and walruses and all manatees. They all have some kind of protection. Usually they have a little extra fat or blubber. They have a different type of skin, or they have a lot of oils in their skin. So if you take a dog like, let's say, a lab, labs are known for, right, swimming, right? They come from Labrador retrievers, and they tend to have an oilier coat. So, yes, they might need to be bathed a bit more often, but it's not just about giving baths. You really have to also use, like, a grooming rake. So a grooming rake is kind of a T-shaped. It almost looks like it would be, you know, something you'd squeegee your, you know, the water off of your shower door with. And what's great about them is they take out the undercoat. You don't dig in. So if you have a short-coated dog, you can still use something like that with a grooming rake. But don't use slicker brushes unless specifically instructed to do so, because what people do is they put them in and dig them in a little too much, and it can actually irritate and scratch and cause sores and actual wounds when you're digging in there with a, you know, like a slicker brush, metal slicker brush. So, you know, there's so many groups on social media. It's really great to go on to one of these meetup groups for your breed of dog or the type of dog, if it's a mixed breed dog, and see what people are doing. And don't just look at people who have had one dog ever. Look at people who've been multiple dogs for multiple years, because they're going to know more. A breeder of a good like a good quality purebred show dog line, they're going to be the greatest ones for you to learn from. They're going to be a huge fountain of knowledge for you. And again, that is something that you need to consider. You know, make sure that you know what to do for your pet. For instance, my Rhodesian Ridgebacks do not need to be bathed every week or every month even. They don't have an oily coat. If you start feeling when you're petting your dog that you kind of have a little residue on your hands, you can use some of the grooming wipes. But if you have a dog in general, you should be using something, even like the grooming rake I mentioned earlier, like the Furminator type thing, which will just take off the dead hair. You can use a pet wipe. Don't just use baby wipes because, you know, they're made specifically for babies, but dogs and babies are not exactly the same, so make sure that it's the right pH and it's a product, a good quality product made specifically for dogs. You can do that, and of course you can wash them, but don't wash them with human shampoo. I know a lot of times they say baby shampoo. There are some great products out there. My favorite shampoo that I use is the same company where we get our vitamin supplements. It's called Nuvet, N-U-V-E-T. It's nuvet.com. You can't get them online other than from the site directly. But they have an oatmeal, really nice smelling, very light smelling shampoo. And then they have also the puppy shampoo, which I use on all our little pups. And, you know, puppies get dirty, obviously, much quicker than an adult dog. But the puppy shampoo is great. And it's safe. It doesn't strip all the oils off. It just kind of gets the dirt off. So don't overbathe, but please remember to groom your animals, you know, either daily or, you know, semi-weekly, something where you can keep track of them. Now, if you have a doodle, one of these poodle mixes, those are kind of tough because underneath their armpits, you have to pay attention. Between their back legs, you have to be careful. In their ears, kind of making sure that your groomer plucks the hair out of the ears or that it's short enough so that you don't have ear infections happening. And really make sure that your groomer is a good groomer, because I have seen so many of these poodle mixes that have had wounds, like open wounds, from groomers who were either scissoring them with, you know, a pair of scissors and caught them with the ends of the scissors. I've seen groomers use a blade that just, like, especially on a, like a Maltese or something that's got Maltese, or some of the poodles or the white or lighter colored dogs that have pinker skin. And they actually use these things, and they just, the hair pulls up and it causes bleeding sometimes. Also, if you have a tiny little dog, like a Maltese or a Yorkie, don't make the little bows or barrettes so tight on their foreheads and on their heads in general, because it pulls up. It can actually not only break the hair, but it can cause them to bruise. So, you know, make sure you get a groomer, and that you, between the times that your good groomer is taking care of dogs, make sure that you keep it up. If you have a full-coated or especially the doodles, not so much a poodle, but the doodles, where these animals just, you know, people sometimes just don't take care of them. They don't clean them, and they don't really take care of them. And then they go to the groomer, and they get mad at the groomer because the groomer had to shave them. Well, the groomer had to shave them because you're not doing any maintenance on it. You can't, it's like, you know, complaining to somebody that, you know, oh, well, my hair doesn't look good, and my hair, now you have to cut my hair off because I haven't brushed it in, you know, 6 months. That's what happens. So you do have to kind of keep those things up. Don't overbathe or overgroom, but just make sure that you keep track of it. And a great way to know how to take care of them is just when you're petting your dog. If you feel a little bump or you feel a little mad or not, just take a little, you know, comb or a little grooming rake and just go through it slowly. Get that out of there. If your groomer is going to be happy, and you're going to be happy because they're not going to have to shave your dog because you didn't do the maintenance on it, which, you know, reminds me of just telling you guys, make sure that if you get a poodle mix, that you are ready for a lot of grooming. They take a lot of grooming, professional grooming. If you want to give it a shot, go for it. but it is, you know, every month or two. I mean, you really have to have a heavy duty, you know, washing them, blow drying them out with your groomer pretty much every month, maybe 6 weeks. And if you don't do anything between those visits, you are going to have a dog that's going to consistently have either shaving areas or areas that get matted that, you know, your groomer's going to have to work on it. And it's not comfortable for the dog. You know, think about somebody trying to get a knot out of your hair. It's not a pleasant experience. So make sure that you do everything for your pet. Make sure that you are, you know, taking care of him. You're getting him groomed or bathing him yourself, whatever it is. Not too frequently, but with regard to what the breed is and what your breed would dictate that you need. So like with Ridgebacks, you know, I bathe them every 4 to 6 months, whether they need it or not. They usually don't need it. With, you know, other breeds, you might have to, you know, wash it every week or two. But don't overdo it, because then that leads to dry skin. And it can also, like I said, lead to even wounds on the dog. So just watch, you know, using metal slickers or metal brushes that can potentially scratch the skin. And then they can either develop something like a hot spot, not necessarily a hot spot, but something like that, or even an infection in the skin, because you're opening an area of the skin. Remember, the skin, the epidermis, is there to protect the underpinnings of your muscles and your skin below that, and you're trying to, you know, keep that clean and keep it water repellent somewhat. So if you start taking all the oils out of the outside of the hair, you're removing a little bit of the natural protection there. So again, that's great. Talk to your breeder, talk to, you know, people who have the same breed or combination of breeds, and get their opinions. And of course, always check with your vet, because your vet knows best. All right, we're going to take another short break, and then we will be right back with the moment. And welcome back to the Pet Savant Unleashed. Well, we're going to end today by talking about keeping your dog active in the winter. Now, if you're in the Northeast, well, actually, if you're almost anywhere in the north central portion of the United States, you know that the weather's been kind of wonky, as it tends to get in the wintertime. We don't really always know what's going on. I know in Missouri and Kansas, we've got a lot of ice. We've got New Jersey, it's cold. New Hampshire, Vermont, Maine, all those areas are getting a lot of snow. But snow isn't necessarily bad for these dogs. It's not horrible for them. But if you're going to be taking your dog out, even if you're taking the dog out for a walk, and it's very, very cold out, I do suggest people getting either a denier, like a ripstop inside, and getting a coat for them, and maybe the boots like we talked about. But I also recommend keeping the dog active. Now, there are places you can go to learn agility. There are places you can go to work inside on different sports and games, even fly ball. There's so many things, if you've got an active dog, so that he doesn't get kind of, you know, the winter look to him with the extra belly that we all have to lose in the spring. And you can actually do some of the dog sports. So there are dog sports like agility. There are dog sports like straight racing. There are dog sports like rally obedience, or just even regular obedience, or different things that the dogs are active with doing skills and tasks. So it keeps them active, but it's inside. And there are places, a lot of times you'll find in an indoor riding arena. So if you check with, if you just go on the internet and do a search and figure it out, you'll see there are actually places that do all kinds of really cool stuff indoors for the winter. And it's really fun. If you have a dog like a lab or a golden or whatever it is that likes to swim and that likes the water, or if you have an animal that just, you want to get them a little bit of excitement and a little bit of fun, there are cool things like indoor swimming pools for dogs. There are indoor dog parks for dogs. There are also underwater treadmills. And that's something that we have, and we're getting involved with, and we're building into our new facility, where we have a swimming pool and underwater treadmills, which are really, really cool. The reason they're cool is the dog stays put in one place, and he just trots. And the buoyancy of the water, which is also wonderful for rehabilitating your dog after he has any kind of surgery. Obviously, the area has to be closed properly so you don't end up having the wound getting wet. But once your dog has been cleared by your veterinarian after surgery or after a procedure, or for an older dog, let's say for an older dog who perhaps, you know, is getting a little bit on in age, rather than trying to bring him back after a long winter and he's now 13 or 14 years old, keep him active through the winter. And that's why I'm telling you, you can do all kinds of stuff underwater, treadmill. Even some people are able to train, which I've done a number of times, train their dogs on a human treadmill. You just have to be careful because obviously dogs have toenails and you want to make sure that the dog stays in the center. But there are actually treadmills that you can buy online that are pretty good, and they have bars and guides on the sides of them and even a place to hook the leash. Now, you do not want to leave your dog ever unattended in an underwater treadmill, a treadmill, anything like that. Like they even say, don't even leave your dog unattended chewing on a bone because they can become injured or you know, worse. But it is really a cool thing to have these underwater treadmills if you do have a facility nearby or your regular treadmill. You could even walk, if it's wide enough, you could even walk with your dog on the treadmill. And don't go, you know, for an hour, because the same is with us, where, you know, it takes us a little time to get into shape. You can do the same thing with your pet. Again, there are indoor dog parks. There are agility courses and teachers who will, I mean, even there's sheep herding. I had three of my Ridgebacks who got herding instinct certifications for sheep herding. And, you know, they're not herding breeds, but they are hounds. And it was pretty cool watching them do these things. There are other things like straight racing, and you just have to look to see what's good for your particular dog and what he enjoys. So, again, that's something that you can look at. And you as the owner can consider what options you have. Even rally obedience, which is kind of fun. Difference between obedience and rally obedience is obedience typically is more controlled. It's a little more, I don't know, just like sit, lie down, paw and all that. And there are obedience champions that can do things you can't even imagine. But what's fun about rally is it's more like mobile. It's more about the interaction than the dog complying with a set of commands. And I like the rally because a lot of it can be on leash, so you can, you know, do this anywhere. And what's great about it is it does build up a good relationship between you and your pet because, you know, listen, dogs like to follow us, but what's nice about it, you'll see by the springtime, your dog who maybe wasn't the best behaved on a leash around other dogs or people, all of a sudden he's gotten used to paying attention to you while he's on a leash because he's getting treats or petted or whatever. And again, this is something that it can build onto a good, strong owner relationship with the dog. If the dog doesn't listen to you when you tell it to stop doing something, or if he doesn't listen because you have to say the word sit 42 times and face east while you're doing it, and then he might listen some of the time, those things will really be in the past. Once you start really getting your dog to listen to you, not because you're demanding it, but you're commanding it. You're commanding respect instead of demanding respect. When you have a dog who is, you know, you call the dog and it goes the other way, you feel like the dog is giving you the middle paw, which, yes, they can do that, that means that the dog doesn't respect you. It doesn't mean he doesn't love you. It just means he may not respect you as being his parent. He might think of you because you're playing tug-of-war and you're wrestling and you don't really follow any of the rules that I teach you guys every week. And, you know, the dog feels like, why do I have to listen to you? It's like when a child taught, you know, to do something, but then another adult says, I don't like the way you're behaving. That's very rude. Apologize. I don't have to apologize. You're not my mother. Well, dogs get like that, too. They feel like, oh, I don't have to do it. Who are you? You're my kid. I'm the one who's protecting you. I'm the one providing for you. I'm the one who's keeping our family safe. I don't have to listen to you. But that's what happens. The dogs are perceiving our actions as them seeing, and again, their perception of reality is reality we have to deal with. So let's just say that that's the case. If a dog thinks it's in charge, and that's why it's barking and growling and snarling and lunging and trying to bite everything, then that's what it thinks. You can't say to the dog, oh, I'm sorry, I miscommunicated with you, Junior. You know, let's you know, discuss this like mature adults. It's like trying to explain to a 2-year-old kid who's having a meltdown because you won't buy them candy at the box store when you're on your way out in the line. And of course, you know, they're so kind to put all the, you know, impulse items like candies and such right there, so you don't want to have a tantrum with your kids, so you just buy it. But that's not really a great way of raising a child or of raising an animal. So if you can think of it instead that make your dog want to be with you instead of demanding it, command it. So how do you command respect? By showing the dog that you're providing for its needs, you're protecting it, you're providing the food, you're taking them for a walk before meals, waiting 15 to 45 minutes after the walk so that your dog realizes that you have taken him out for a hunt, so to speak, and that every day or twice a day, hopefully, because you want to do it before each of the meals, or more frequently if you want, that, you know, hey, we're going out to hunt, and look what I found. Now, people will say to me, oh, my goodness, dogs don't know that you're hunting because I'm getting it from the store or I'm getting it delivered. But they do because it is primal. Animals know that when they go out for a hunt walk, that they come back, and after that hunt walk, they have to wait. They have to wait 15 to 45 minutes because you know what that means? Somebody else is eating before they are. Symbolically, you don't have to eat in front of your dog. That's kind of mean, but you don't have to eat in front of your dog. But your dog needs to know that he's not the first one who does eat because he's not the one that's in charge. You'll be surprised if you follow what I do and you listen and you kind of do this, follow it like it's a recipe for a cake. You're going to see a better, well-behaved dog, a happier dog, because it's really hard to not be stressed when you feel like you've got to do the providing and protecting. It stinks to get fired or, you know, have an issue where you have family and now, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do? I'm worried now. What am I going to do because, you know, I've lost my job. How can I support my family and my kids? Well, that's not a good feeling. So don't let your dog feel like that in the first place. You become the parent. Let him become the child or her become the child. And that's going to help you so much because the dog who feels that you're in charge doesn't have a job. So he doesn't have to bark. He doesn't have to lunge. He doesn't have to protect himself. He doesn't have to kill animals or have a strong prey drive because why would he? He's not the one in charge. He's the kid. I mean, I think most people would prefer to go back to when they were kids and didn't have the responsibility, especially before you start school and have homework. I mean, when you're 5 years old, it's like the best time of your life. And what do we all say? Oh, I can't wait to grow up. I can't wait. Well, if I were a grown-up, right, okay. And now we're grown-ups and we can't wait to be kids again. So let's kind of put that out there of don't feel like you have to spoil your dog, right? Spoil your dog. Give him everything. Give her everything. But don't spoil him or her rotten. Let that dog know that you're in charge. And it's not a bad thing that you're in charge. It's a great thing that you're in charge. Because if you don't own your company, you don't have to make rules. You don't have to enforce the rules. All you got to do is follow. It's like, hey, kids, you know, you got to do your homework. Okay, I'll go do my homework. But I'd rather have to worry about doing my homework than getting a job, keeping a job, and do all those things that we grown-ups have to do. I think everybody within earshot is probably saying, yeah, it was really okay. even if you, you know, you didn't have the swiftest or the best early life, we've got to admit that the stress that we put on and the demands we put on our dogs are crazy. It's just crazy. We give those dogs a feeling that they have to provide for us, they have to protect, and then we get mad at them when they do it. They're just doing the job they think we want them to do. So be kind to your dog. Spoil them. Please don't spoil them rotten. Well, I hate to say it, but we're done with our show again today. And unfortunately, we got to wait a week before we get together again. I hope everybody has been having a great, happy, healthy New Year. It continues. Good health, joy, and happiness to all. And we'll see you next week on The Pet Savant Unleashed.